we've almost finished our own submission to the federal government, which we and the state institutes have been working on. That'll be ready in the coming days. So yeah, look, we should be positive about it. It's money for nothing and it keeps the economy flowing, doesn't it?
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry, sales professionals, property managers and leaders. We bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Joining me today is the president of the Real Estate Institute of Australia and the founder of View Real Estate based in Tasmania, Adrian Kelly. Welcome to the show.
G'day, Samantha. Thanks for having me.
It's actually great to catch up with you because I know you've been an incredibly busy man over the last couple of months. First of all, can I just ask, how are you? Are you okay?
Oh, I'm great, thanks. Yeah, I'm stuck in my home state of Tasmania and I can't get out. Or if I want to get out, then I have a problem getting back home. So it's been nice to spend a bit of time at home. But yeah, you're right. I certainly haven't been bored, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about the last couple of months for you. I'm guessing probably started earlier for you than most people. So we started hearing a lot about COVID-19 at the end of January, early February. When did you first get an inkling that this was going to be a very big deal for this industry?
Well, I had a bit of an unfair advantage because my partner flies with Qantas.
Right.
And we found out about what was happening on that particular Saturday, but we knew a week or two beforehand because, you know, there were Qantas baggage handlers and people like that at Tullamarine talking about border closures and that sort of thing before it really became public news. And, yeah, you know, the rest is almost sort of history, isn't it? So the proverbial hit the fan and all of a sudden a lot of those Qantas employees are also our tenants. So they started phoning us because they were all still down, as well as my own partner, one of the 20,000. So the phone started ringing from those people who are our tenants saying they've lost employment and can't pay the rent, but then their phones also started ringing because a lot of those people are also our property owners. So it became a bit of a double whammy for them. And to be honest, that whole tenant situation is still yet to play out, isn't it? Because every state still has a non-eviction period in place. I mean, our non-eviction period here in Tasmania is due to end at the end of June, so it will be the real litmus test as to what's going to happen to those tenants. As I say, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just talk about the rivers, because there's rivers, I would say, that are going under plenty of bridges right now. So one of those rivers is obviously the stimulus packages that the government's got going on. So let's attack JobKeeper first, or not attack it, but talk about it. So JobKeeper's been something that has been helpful to tenants and to employers to basically keep business going while everything's been shut. The only thing is that JobKeeper in the real estate industry, with volumes being down over April and Fair Work last year brought in some new regulations to do with the minimum income threshold, or the MITRE as we know it as. How does what's happened with COVID and JobKeeper impact the MITRE, and what likelihood have we got of commission-only employees making the MITRE this year?
Well, to separate the two issues, we recognised very early on that there was a problem with JobKeeper for estate agents because of the way that we trade. And estate agents have this thing called a pipeline, so sales that have been made but they're yet to settle. And so it was quite difficult for a large volume of estate agents to qualify for JobKeeper because of that pipeline. And what we didn't want was for the JobKeeper program to run halfway through its course before estate agents could qualify. And I'm talking about the 30% downturn in income or turnover. The other issue, particularly for agents in Melbourne and Sydney, was that you might remember that early last year was pretty ordinary trading conditions in terms of sales. It was the lead up to the federal election and consumer sentiment wasn't great. And then we had the election and the surprise result and the market took off again. So, and the market's been very strong right up until COVID hit in sort of March this year. So being able to justify a 30% downturn earlier this year compared with poor trading conditions last year was very difficult, and thankfully the tax office listened to us, and that's where the alternative test came from. So even though you haven't got a 30% downturn yet, you should be able to justify it, and that's meant that a lot of agents could access the JobKeeper program, whereas otherwise they may not have been able to. With regard to commission-only employees, that's a really difficult one. It's particularly a problem in, let's take Western Australia, for example, where they've got about 5,000 salespeople running around over there, and about 80, 85% of those are employed on a commission-only basis, so a very large cohort. So what happens in that commission-only sphere really does affect a state like that, not to mention Melbourne and Sydney. So we went fairly early to the Fair Work Commission because we knew that with what we thought was coming at that time in terms of a downturn of sales, a dramatic downturn of sales, commission-only salespeople would be very unlikely to meet the MITRE, so $56,000 approximately, within that 12-month period. So we asked the Fair Work Commission to halve the MITRE, halve the dollar value, and they said no to that. And with the benefit of hindsight, we probably went a little bit early because we didn't have any sales data to justify what we were asking for. And since then, there's another submission which has gone in, which will basically disregard all of the months that COVID has been a problem. Everyone's been talking 6 months for COVID, so it's sort of the same as halving the MITRE, but not quite. I have a personal view that that's probably not going to cut it for commission-only salespeople because, as we all know, there's that massive lag time between when a salesperson receives a telephone inquiry for appraisal. Appraisal becomes a listing, listed becomes a sale, and the sale actually settles. So chopping out those COVID months, which we're in the middle of now, probably won't be enough. But I'd have to say the Fair Work Commission has been reading all of our submissions and we've been spending a fair bit of time educating them about how real estate sort of works in the real world. So that remains a work in progress, I'd have to say. We'll just have to see how all of that plays out.
Yeah, I've noticed in the Facebook groups and things like that of real estate agents, there's been a lot of confusion and a lot of questions over that. So I guess it's a wait and see, because once we've got real data, then we'll be able to run some real scenarios and see what's what.
The other thing too is that different businesses have treated the JobKeeper program differently. Some salespeople have been getting paid JobKeeper, whereas others haven't, and the debit credit system has come back into play. But I suppose the important point is that the JobKeeper program is a wage subsidy for the business. It's not meant to be a bonus for salespeople. And I'm sorry to give some of your viewers the bad news, but that's what it's all about. It's about making sure the business can survive through difficult trading periods. So, but I understand that different businesses are treating it differently for various reasons.
And it has been difficult for some businesses. Like, we've seen different levels of rent problems across the country. So talking to some people that are saying, well, we haven't had to deal with too many rent reductions at all. We haven't had to deal with too many tenants in hardship. But then you look at other areas where it's a very, very big problem. What are you seeing from a national point of view on that situation for people who have lost their jobs as a result of COVID-19?
It's hard to get the numbers, isn't it? It's really difficult. You know, I'm hearing a good 10% of tenants are in trouble in Victoria, but less than 10% in New South Wales. But, you know, 10% of a large population is a very large number of tenants, no matter how you look at it. And the problem for tenants is in terms of unemployment and rent reductions, is probably going to be a lot more pronounced in Melbourne and Sydney than other parts of the country. That's just the reality. And Sydney and Melbourne get those big highs and big lows anyway. But I think, like, the real problem is yet to play out. And that's going to come around in sort of September, October, when JobKeeper and JobSeeker come to an end potentially. Mm-hmm. Banks are going to start to want their mortgage repayments again from their property owners. And the non-eviction period, particularly those who have lost employment and haven't been paying rent, is going to start to come to an end. And in the majority of cases, the rent has still accrued for those tenants. So I'm not sure how we're going to solve that problem, but it's coming. And it sort of feels like a bit of a slow-moving freight train at the moment that's coming. You know, we've gotten rid of the virus thing, in theory, so we're putting that to bed. But now we've got this economic issue which is slowly rolling down the tracks. And you know what? A lot of tenants did try it on. They saw this as an opportunity to save a few bucks. And they were the noisy tenants. They were the ones that were making all the noise in the media, whereas the real tenants, the real working-class people who had the rug pulled out from underneath them overnight, hospitality, tourism employees, and they are really suffering with pure stress and anxiety at the moment. And so they're the people that I really feel for, who are very unclear as to what the future is going to hold for them, and it's going to be the estate agent stuck in the middle that's got to deal with it. We're doing what we can to make sure that the state and federal governments are very much aware of how we're feeling in that space, because I can see as plain as day that it's going to be the property managers that are going to have to deal with this problem somehow. So, Sam, we'll just see how it plays out, I guess. Yeah, it's an interesting space, I'd have to say.
It is interesting because when all that business was going on, we were kind of wondering, you know, like with rent reductions and things like that, how landlords were going to be affected, because obviously landlords aren't all, you know, sort of wealthy property developers. A lot of landlords in this country are mums and dads. And then if they're not getting any income, then the property manager is not getting any income either, or the property management business is not getting any income. So how big a role has landlord insurance played in making sure that their interests are looked after as well?
Look, landlord insurance was a mess to begin with, in the sense that there's a lot of landlord insurance companies and there's a lot of different policies right across the country. And the problem was that very early on, landlord insurance companies were still forcing property managers to issue heavy-handed notices to tenants who had lost employment and couldn't pay the rent. And they are heavy-handed letters too. So they're, and then eviction notices. So here we've got the federal government saying on one hand, non-eviction period, and tenants, you won't be evicted, even though if you can't afford to pay the rent, there's no problem. And then we've got the landlord insurance companies saying, you must still send out these notices saying you're going to be evicted. And the poor property managers were stuck in the middle. And that was very much, very widely publicised in the media, particularly the left-wing media, which didn't understand what was happening at the time. So REA did a lot of work with the Insurance Council of Australia. So, and most of the insurance companies are members of the Insurance Council. And it took weeks, I'd have to say, but we got there in the end. So now, as everybody knows, there's now no need to be sending out those eviction notices, notices to vacate and all of that sort of thing. But there is still the problem where the government has encouraged property owners to do a deal with their tenants in the form of rent reduction if they're able to. And many, many property owners have done the right thing. But now the insurance companies are saying that they can't make a claim because they avoided their policy by doing a deal direct with the tenant. Now, to me, that doesn't make sense, because it would have been very easy for the property owner to say, no deal, sorry, tenant, that's it. And then the insurance company would have had to have paid out a very large claim, whereas now all the insurance companies are being asked for is to pay out a much smaller amount, so just the difference. So that remains a work in progress. I mean, you know, we've got to remember that insurance companies are businesses as well, and they can see what's coming, just as everybody else can. So it's probably likely that they're going to get somewhat smashed, and they want to limit that, and we get that. But at the same time, the real estate industry and all of our property owners out there have been very supportive of landlord insurance companies over a number of decades now. And with what is coming, now is probably the time for them to step up and do the right thing.
Interesting. Just then you referred to something that it occurred to me in the thick of the crisis watching you handling the whole thing, was that you're not just dealing with what's happening at a federal level, you're also dealing with what's happening with different legislation in different states. How difficult has that been for you to try and get everybody on the same page? I think some of us had really loved there to be a national standard on this. What are your thoughts on that and moving forward?
I really take my hat off to the state institutes, because they were in the thick of this just as much as any of us. So, and whilst we would have liked some sort of national framework or guidelines with regard to tenancies, the trouble is it's state-based legislation. And some states were very good in the way they managed the problem. And we have to remember that we were talking about a pandemic back then. And the idea was that all tenants, if we needed to shut Australia down, all tenants, or everybody for that matter, needed to have a roof over their heads. That's what it was all about. And we get that. But now, you know, some states moved a lot quicker than others. For example, Tasmania, where I live, their non-eviction legislation was in place a good 3 or 4 weeks before any other state. And it seemed to me that some of the biggest states were some of the slowest to move. And I'm not sure whether that's, you know, larger government departments and, you know, more bureaucrats and that sort of thing. It was interesting, but I think we got away with it in the end. So I'm not sure whether I've answered your question, Sam. There's only so much that REIA at a federal level can do. I mean, we're pretty lucky because since the federal election last year, we now have a dedicated Minister for Housing in Michael Silka. So we do have a direct line into the federal government by Michael, which has been outstanding, I'd have to say. But you're right, it did create difficulties with all of the states heading off in different directions. And, you know, thankfully some states have been very good in providing funding for those tenants who have lost employment. A couple of thousand up in Queensland, and I think it was 2,500 in Victoria, a couple of thousand down here in Tasmania. Although it's not sheep stations, every little bit helps at the moment, doesn't it? So
yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? Trying to get all of the states to do something is a bit like getting a bunch of real estate agents to do something together. It's the old herding cats thing. You know, it's not that easy. Anyway, there's nothing like a pandemic to bring everybody together, I suppose, is there?
Yeah. Well, I know when it hit, we were planning on a move to Queensland, but I think that's still off the cards for a while. We'll be cooling our heels in New South Wales.
Well, that's an interesting one. We've been talking about what's going to happen with tourism in Australia. Everybody's been stuck at home for so long, and everyone's going to want to go on a holiday. So who would have thought people are going to want to go to Surfers Paradise or, back up to Cairns for a holiday, so, or come back to Tasmania where I live. So I think even though domestic tourism is in a bit of a hole at the moment, you know, we've got a suspicion that's going to bounce back very strongly once all those borders are reopened and COVID really is under control.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, this whole thing has been a very personal thing for everyone. And, you know, everyone's appetite for leaving home, even just to go to a restaurant, is going to be very different for the next 12 months, which is interesting.
Fortunate enough to go to a restaurant on Saturday for my sister's birthday. And I'd have to say it was a bit of a surreal experience, but I have a new appreciation for what we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to a restaurant last week too, and it wasn't here's a menu, it was have you got the COVID safe app on, and if you haven't, can I take your details, and now you can have a menu.
Sounds a bit like a real estate open home, doesn't it?
It does a little bit indeed. Let's talk about moving forward, because the government have just recently announced a new stimulus package where they're offering $25,000, you know, for renovations and things like that. I mean, you can't build a swimming pool or a tennis court, and as I understand, investors can't use it either. But how do you see that impacting the real estate industry over the next few months?
I haven't heard any business person in Australia be critical of the government for the work that they've done in stimulus packages. And this is just another example of that. I've heard a few commentators this morning talking about that the thresholds are a bit high. You know, you've got to be spending over 100 grand on a renovation, or 150 to be able to access the 25,000. So what? It's better than nothing, and it can always be adjusted on the way through. The really important thing about this particular package from our industry's point of view is that we've spent a lot of time talking to the federal government about if you're going to provide construction stimulus and spread it across the entire housing market, because the last thing that we need is for any damage to be done to our sales market at the moment. And whilst volumes are down, we're doing okay. We don't need any further damage, so make sure you spread the stimulus right across the housing market, which is not what the construction industry was asking for. They only wanted this to be applied to new builds. So hats off to the feds for spreading this across existing homeowners as well. And I am quite sure that there will be more stimulus packages announced as things go on. We've almost finished our own submission to the federal government, which we and the state institutes have been working on. That'll be ready in the coming days. So yeah, look, we should be positive about it. It's money for nothing and it keeps the economy flowing, doesn't it? So yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Where's your focus along with the states going to be as far as talking to the federal government over the next couple of months?
Look, when the package is finished, I'm happy to send it to you and you can send it round to all of your listeners and viewers. We're very concerned about the tenants. We've dealt with that, as we're also concerned about our property owners as well. But I think the real issue is going to be around the volume of sales that's occurring. And whilst the numbers are still a bit rubbery, they're somewhere between 20 and 40%, depending on which city or town that you live in. I mean, we're just lucky that demand is there at the moment and interest rates are low and money's cheap. So if you've still got employment, you know, finance is pretty easy to access. But to answer your question, our focus is going to be around the volume of sales and keeping that existing housing market stimulated, because particularly at the lower end, you know, the middle to high end still seems to be doing okay, but the lower end is a problem, which is where most of the job losses have occurred. But the trouble is you need those sales occurring at the lower end, because that's where the domino effect starts. So one sale down here, a first-time buyer or a young family, ends up with 3, 4 or 5 sales happening down the line. And that's where our real issue is at the moment. So, yeah, so that'll be our future focus, particularly over the next 6 months.
That sounds like you're going to be kept busy again. One more topic I'd like to talk about is stamp duty. one of everybody's favourite topics in the real estate industry, I think, either one way or another. But there's been talk of stamp duty being scrapped, which could go one of two ways for industry businesses. And that is, one thing is everyone says, yes, that's great. Or then you get a whole lot of people sitting on the fence waiting to see if it actually does get scrapped or not. What kind of messages are you hoping are happening about stamp duty right now?
If there's going to be an adjustment to the way that stamp duty works, then the governments, I'm talking about state governments because it is a state government tax, they need to move pretty quickly. Because the last thing we need is people sitting on their hands, which is what's happening at the moment in terms of potential sellers. We don't need potential buyers doing exactly the same thing. I mean, stamp duty and other land tax, I mean, they're all nonsense and they always have been. Should have disappeared when the GST came in, but they never did. And so the states have been feeding on these rivers of gold which have been flowing for many years. So I suppose the question is, with all of these stimulus packages, not just for the real estate industry, is how are we going to pay for it? And we've been talking about the GST and whether the GST might need to be raised. We haven't landed on a position regarding that, but if we had to choose between land tax in every state on every single property, including the house that, or the property that we all live in, I think we'd rather have an increase in the GST, which would be a much fairer way because then everybody pays. But to get back to your stamp duty question, if you're going to do something, then just do it now, please, so that we all know what's happening, because there's enough uncertainty out there in the marketplace at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the main thing everyone wants is they want to see a bit more consumer confidence, particularly now that we're officially in a recession for the first time in 30 years.
Well, if we're in a recession now, we're still doing a lot better than many other countries, so I think we should be pretty grateful, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. You became president of the REIA in 2018. Did you ever imagine taking on this job would lead you into all of these unprecedented times?
Who would have thought? Last year it was a federal election campaign, whereas this year it's a pandemic, which is an election campaign on pure steroids. Who would have thought? You know, I'm pretty lucky. Like, I've got some very good people around me at REIA, and all of the state institutes are very supportive of work as well, particularly the CEOs of those institutes. And I mean that quite sincerely. So, and it's interesting that it takes a crisis like a pandemic for people to really show some true leadership. And, you know, I'm actually very grateful for the opportunity, not for what brought it about, but for the opportunity. And I suppose if nothing else down the track, Sam, it'll look good on my resume, hopefully.
Well, I was just about to give you a compliment, actually, because I think we've watched your leadership and along with the leaders in Australia. I mean, I have nothing but respect for our leadership in Scott Morrison and in New South Wales and Gladys Berejiklian for making the tough calls and making them early. And also yourself, you were right there in the thick of it at every moment. I guess as a real estate business owner, and there'll be real estate business owners listening to this, what leadership lessons have you learned along the way?
You know what? We went out very early when we knew we had a problem with our tenants, and we went out in a very fair manner to let everybody know that we've got a problem with our tenants, but we've also got a problem with our property owners. And I think the media and the general public understood that we were talking common sense and we weren't talking self-interest or bagging one cohort against another cohort. And, you know, in those early weeks, you really didn't hear from people like the tenants union and that sort of thing. And that was because what we were talking about was the truth, as difficult as it was at the time. So to answer your question, I suppose, so long as you're upfront and honest with people all the time, and they won't always like what you have to say, but that's just tough. And so long as you always tell the truth and don't tell lies, then I think people will respect you for it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good lesson. Moving forward, we were having a conversation. Obviously, COVID-19 has changed the world. It's changed Australia. It's changed the way that a lot of us do business. And it brought back a memory of, you know, the Apple iPhone. When the Apple iPhone came out, it had an unintended consequence in that people stopped buying chewing gum at checkouts because they were on their phones, you know, scrolling Facebook rather than looking at what the supermarkets had put in front of them. Are there any unintended consequences you think we should look out for, or anything in the future you think we should look out for in the next few months?
We always used to talk about what threats there are to the real estate industry, didn't we? And, you know, we're talking about technology or a Google or a Facebook or whatever.
Ubers, yeah.
Yeah. And but we never thought about a pandemic, did we?
No.
And the biggest threat to the real estate industry is the one that's actually not there yet. And here it came, and none of us saw it coming. So I'm not sure what the answer to your question is, but I was really impressed with the way that estate agents moved to technology very quickly. And I really felt for the auctioneers, because their businesses were essentially shut down overnight. And this was on a Thursday night, for God's sake, and they had auctions booked for Saturday morning. So I think the real lesson out of this is that as an industry, we are actually very adaptive. I mean, we should be thankful that we're one of the industries that was allowed to continue to trade right through this. An essential service, housing affects everybody. So I think the answer is, yeah, Sam, being able to adapt. And I'm sure we would do it again. I hope we don't get another pandemic or something that comes out of left field, which we don't see coming. But I think it just does go to show that we're probably better than what we give ourselves credit for, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, like I've watched everyone and, you know, like I've actually watched some businesses, people that I know quite well, have actually leaned themselves down, made themselves more efficient, adapted with virtual tours and so on. I mean, that was going to be my last question to you is your own business. I mean, you must have had to juggle seriously between Vue and between your role as...
You know, I'm lucky. I've got some really nice people that work for me. You know, they're not gorillas, if you know what I mean. So they just got on with it. Admittedly, with the heads up that I had with the Qantas thing, we closed all our offices straight away and sent everybody to work from home. So no physical offices were open. And I don't regret doing that at all. And it's actually worked out quite well. You know, and we had that virus outbreak up in the northwest of Tasmania. I've got a couple of offices up there. So it was probably good that we did move pretty quickly. So, no, it's been good. It's all right. Our market's still pretty strong down here, I'd have to say. So I think the locals have realised that they better hurry up and buy something before Qantas is flying again and all the mainlanders are back. So not too far away. So I think, by and large, Tasmania's coming out of it pretty well unscathed, sort of.
Yeah.
So, no, it's been good.
You just got to be mindful of all the tourists coming in now.
We'll take anybody's money at the moment, thank you. So, but just leave the virus in your home state if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, good advice. Well, Adrian, look, it's been really great to talk to you and get some insight into what you've been experiencing over the last couple of months. If there was one thing you'd like to leave the audience with or one tip that you'd like to leave the audience with, what would it be?
Look, to be honest, I just want to say thank you for the way that everyone's conducted themselves. It's been extremely trying times, but by and large, I think we should be pretty proud of the job that we've done, particularly in the way that we've managed our tenant problem, because they are human beings with feelings and emotions as well. So thank you for your time, Sam, as well. It's been great to talk to you too. And I'm sorry it's taken a few months to be able to catch up with you, but I'm really pleased that we've got the opportunity now. So.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be hearing from you more in the next couple of months. Adrian Kelly, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate from Elite Agent. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit eliteagentelevate.com.